This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
But as health officials learned when Ebola rampaged through West Africa, killing more than 11,000 people between 2014 and 2016, earning public trust is a major element of the fight.
That's VOA's Anita Powell reporting on the Ebola outbreak. Details coming up.
Also, Libya's rival leaders today agreed on a political roadmap, including elections in December, to bring order to the country. And Zimbabwe's main opposition group, the Movement for Democratic Change, starts the process of electing candidates for the coming national elections.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, a senior official with the World Health Organization says he's cautiously optimistic about the handling of the Ebola crisis in Mbandaka in Equator province of the DRC. Peter Salama is the WHO's Deputy Director General for Emergency Preparedness and Response. He noted that 90% of those at risk in the city have been vaccinated against the disease, including 400 people in recent days. Salama says he hopes to get the government's approval to try 5 experimental drugs to treat those affected and to help prevent future outbreaks. In related news, the WHO's revised plan to treat Ebola is budgeting for up to 300 cases between May and July. It's also increased the amount of money targeting the disease from an initial $26 million to $56 million. Congolese health officials say so far the outbreak has included 54 people, 35 confirmed, 13 probable and 6 suspected. There have been 25 deaths. This is the 9th outbreak of the disease in the country.
Meanwhile, health officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo have begun a vaccination drive to control an Ebola outbreak that has infected more than 50 people and killed as many as 25. But as aid workers and health experts explain, this vaccination drive is a careful, methodical process in which trust is a key element. VOA's Anita Powell reports.
Health officials in the rural corner of northwest Congo that has been hit with Ebola say workers are seeking out those at the highest risk to vaccinate, a move that tries to cut off the virus at the pass while also making good use of the limited supply of the vaccine. At the moment, officials have only 7,500 doses of the experimental vaccine. World Health Organization spokesman Tarek Yasarevic explained the campaign, which began this week in the rural communities of Bikoro and Iboko.
This is not a general mass immunization as it is being done for some other diseases. We are looking into people who have been in contact with those who tested positive for Ebola and their contact. So we make a ring around the person who contracted the virus.
That is careful work and involves much more than medicine, says UNICEF field worker Jean-Claude Nzengu.
La grande mission que nous avons, donc en communication pour le développement ici,
he says workers go to the households to talk about the vaccination that stops transmission, the advantage of the vaccination, what the residents need to do, how to behave, and finally, take them to be vaccinated. Congolese health authorities first reported the Ebola outbreak in early May. This is not Congo's first encounter with the often deadly virus, which causes an acute, serious illness. The WHO puts a survival rate around 50%. But as health officials learned when Ebola rampaged through West Africa, killing more than 11,000 people between 2014 and 2016, earning public trust is a major element of the fight. Last week, 3 infected patients escaped from isolation units in the city of Mbandaka. 2 were found dead a day later, and the other was found alive and returned to quarantine. Yasarevic says it takes cooperation from the entire community for an Ebola outbreak to be defeated.
It is only human that people who have their relatives in isolation units want them to be at home, to be with their family home in what could be the last moments of their life. But we need really to explain to everyone that how disease is being transmitted. If person who is sick is in isolation unit, it not only increases the chance of survival for this patient, but it will also prevent the spread of the virus to the family.
The vaccination drive began last week, with healthcare workers receiving the first doses. The experimental vaccine made by U.S.-based Merck Pharmaceuticals has been shown in trials to be safe for humans. Anita Pal, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Libya's rival leaders today agreed on a political roadmap, including elections in December, to bring order to the country. Representatives of 20 countries, including Libya's neighbors, regional and Western powers, and international organizations met today in Paris. The French government organized the conference with the support of the UN. Libya is split between rival governments in the East and West, each backed by an array of militias. Participants to the conference include Prime Minister Fayez al-Sarraj, head of Libya's UN-recognized government in Tripoli in the West, and Khalifa Haftar, the commander of Libya's self-styled National Army, which dominates the country's east. The leaders of the country's two rival parliaments also took part. Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the Libya Analysis website, spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy from London about the conference and its results.
It's significant because these four different Libyan leaders have not been in the same room before. The fact they've all attended this meeting and have agreed to these different points and to this timetable is significant. However, the devil is in the details. So although they have set a timeline and have agreed to create a constitutional basis for the elections, the real difficulties will be in how that's actually implemented on the ground. How do they get buy-in from the different factions that weren't represented at the meeting, from the different militias, and how do they actually technically approve a new constitution and actually put the elections into effect?
French President Emmanuel Macron said at a press conference after the Paris gathering concluded that this was the first time these Libyan leaders accepted to work together and approved a joint declaration. What could make or break such a breakthrough?
I think it could be the implementation. So it's great that there's an agreement, that they've all agreed on some key points together, but the difficulty will be how these are implemented and what framework is used to do that. We've seen in the past the Libyan political agreement agreed at the end of 2015. In theory, this was agreed by the Libyan, different Libyan leadership, and yet for 2.5 years it still has not been implemented. And actually the UN envoy Hassan Salame only 2 weeks ago said that they had given up on trying to amend the LPA. So I think the difficulty will really come in trying to address some of the key divisions and questions which still remain over, for example, you know, what will the format of the new parliament be? What will the powers of the president be? Where will the power divide between military power and civilian power lie? And these, I think, are key questions that will have to be decided before the elections. And I think that's where we could see a lot of difficulties, and we may see the same old story where something is agreed in paper, but in reality it's very difficult to actually implement.
The focus in the conference was holding elections. Are elections the right prescription to end the Libyan conflict?
I think in order for elections to be helpful, the right conditions need to be in place. I don't think that elections by themselves can be a panacea. And I think there is a real danger that holding elections too soon, when there isn't the right security, there's still a lot of division, instability, actually this could make the problems worse, because instead of encouraging Libyans to work together, to reconcile, to find a politically based solution that everyone can agree to, by focusing on elections, actually what this could do is drive different factions, for example, from the east or from the west or from the south, to push their own interests and support their own factions and actually create bigger divides. And I mean, we've seen this in the past in Libya, 2014 elections they held essentially to try and create more legitimacy for the existing government, but actually what ended up happening is it's a country really split into two. So I think we should be very careful about hailing elections as a solution to everything. Without the right conditions in place, then that they could make things a lot worse.
Regional powers who are involved in Libya were participating in that conference. Would that mean countries like Egypt, United Arab Emirates, Qatar and Turkey could work together in Libya?
In theory, it's possible, because as you mentioned, they all attended this meeting, although I think sent different levels of seniority of their diplomats and politicians. However, even if they all support elections, which they may do, and don't forget these different regional countries have also all supported, in theory, the UN-backed the Libyan political agreement and the action plan. I think the danger will come is when elections or if elections happen, that all of these different regional actors and European actors as well may be supporting different Libyan entities or factions, and actually the conditions aren't there. If there aren't free and fair elections, if people can't campaign across the country, if they can't campaign without being intimidated or threat of being kidnapped and assassinated, then actually the results are likely to be contested. And at that point, we could see those regional divisions creating even more division within the country, as we may have Egypt, for example, not backing. If an Islamist government were to win, they are unlikely to react to that well, and so on and so forth. So in theory, they could work together, and they may, but actually those underlying divides at the moment still appear to be there.
That was Rhiannon Smith, a Libya analyst in London, speaking with our colleague Mohammed El-Shenawi.
Zimbabwe's main opposition group, the Movement for Democratic Change, the MDC, has been holding internal elections to select the candidates for the coming national elections. But as reporter Kuzai Zinawash reports, the process has been troubled.
Morgan Komichi is the MDC's national chairperson.
We are almost 80% through now of our primary elections. Our primary elections have been conducted by an independent commission to remove the bias, subjectivity. So far, we are very happy with the process. Democracy is taking place.
However, just like the ruling party's ANOPF selection process, the MDC's primary elections have not been smooth. Some members pulled out of the elections, complaining of uneven support, and some participants have appealed to the party. MDC Vice President Elias Muturi has cried foul along with other senior party members. Jesse Majome, a MDC member of parliament, was so angry she pulled out of the primaries and announced she would run as an independent candidate in the coming elections. Komichi says the party will address those concerns, especially appeals over primary results.
We have so far received some of the appeals that have come from the process of primary elections. And within a few days to come, we are going to have the appeals tribunal, which will look at these appeals.
The MDC has been known as the party of excellence, but a dark streak of violence within its factions taints the party's image. The primary elections were not spared the violence. Komichi says that will also be taken care of.
In the process of primary elections, we came with some elements who spearheaded violence. I want to warn that justice will be done. The heads will roll. We don't want people who would like to influence the process by using thugs or any unlawful means. We will not reward those bad elements at all, but we will punish them.
He adds that a report is being compiled and some may lose the post they recently won in the internal elections if they are implicated in any wrongdoing. Komichi says the MDC is setting up its house in order to contest the coming elections, expected in July. But party leaders are worried about the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, which refuses to give them a full copy of the voters' roll and other problems with transparency. Komichi says party leaders are looking into resolving these issues and also working to draw in other groups that are not yet part of the alliance. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580, and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 19 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Vaccination drive to control an Ebola outbreak that has infected more than 50 people and killed as many as 25 has begun in the DRC. Libya's rival leaders today agreed on a political roadmap, including elections in December, to bring order to the country. And Zimbabwe's main opposition group, the Movement for Democratic Change, has started the process of electing candidates for the coming national elections. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
A A high-level panel on migration says sub-regional migration on the continent is brisk and having a beneficial impact on African economies. During a two-day meeting in Geneva, the panel has been exploring ways to maximize these benefits by making migration safe, orderly, and regular. Lisa Schlein has more.
The UN Migration Agency reports 1 billion people are currently on the move, yet media reports of migration crises such as those in the Mediterranean Sea and along the border between the United States and Latin America tend to paint a negative image of this process. Rarely do they discuss the many contributions made by migrants to their adoptive societies. Former Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is chair of the high-level panel on migration. She says it is time to end this misperception of migrants and to demystify migration on the African continent. Sirleaf says the human tragedy unfolding in the Mediterranean Sea makes it seem that hordes of migrants are fleeing Africa. She tells VOA, though the number of Africans crossing over is relatively small.
But because they face such hardships, because many times their rights are infringed upon, these get the sensational reports. And then it forms this perception that a majority of Africans are trying to leave the continent to seek opportunities. But the reality is really far from the perception.
Sirleaf says data show within the continent, 70% of the overall migration is intra-African, that is, Africans moving from one African country to another. Former Liberian President Sirleaf says the free movement of goods and services and development strategies require the free movement of people across national boundaries. She says this will enable African countries to explore opportunities and achieve economic transformation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
African businessmen and pig farmers recently met in Uganda to discuss ways of expanding the pork industry. They say there's an undeveloped market for the meat and value-added products. Reporter Mugume Davis Rawakaringi files this report from Kampala.
On your farm, embrace a practice of actually weighing your pigs. It is actually good practice because it helps you know whether your pigs are actually performing well or there is actually something wrong with your herd. As I told you, I said you can't feed sweet potato silage alone. You're supposed to supplement it.
Peter Lule Mulindwa, who works for International Livestock Research Institute in Kampala, is delivering a lecture at the recent Pork Expo held in the Ugandan capital. The event was organized by a local company, Pig Production and Marketing Uganda Limited. Listening intently are 200 farmers from different African countries. One of the farmers here is Bernard Njau of Red Pist Farms from Nairobi, Kenya. Njau, who owns over 700 pigs, says he has learned new farming practices that will apply to his farm.
What I didn't know about mechanization is that with mechanization, I can completely reduce my cost of labor. Because in terms of sweeping the place, in terms of keeping the place nice and clean and dry, and in terms of ensuring that the animals are warm enough, because we lose a lot of their energy by trying to warm them. With this mechanization, they keep a lot of warmth, so you don't spend too much energy, you know, warming themselves, especially when they are young.
Bolaji Oluwole, a commercial pig farmer from Nigeria, says food scientists at the expo introduced him to better breeds of pig to purchase for his farm. He also says he has learned how to market his pork products.
Like 4 or 5 years ago in Nigeria, pig was not a meat that was really accepted by people, maybe because of the Muslims and all that. But now, surprisingly, pig is actually even competing with cows and beefs and all that. So I think it's the next thing in terms of protein coming up in Africa. People are actually adapting to the pig meat, and that's one of the reasons why I've actually gone into it.
Aren Sefuka, a piggery farmer from Uganda, says she usually depends on information from neighbors about how to manage her business. Now, Senfuka says she has new ideas for running her farm.
Now I know what to feed and what not to feed. because most of the time when you mix this and that and the other, because you've heard it from other farmers, other people, you don't get results. Because most of these things we've learned today, they've been researched about. I know what to do, and I know the exact feed which is going to help me grow in this pig business.
Peter Lemulindwa says this is exactly what they want all the farmers to know.
We concentrated on feeding the pig because pig feeding takes about 62% of the variable cost that are incurred when you're actually rearing pigs. And also concentrated on diseases, especially African swine fever, because it causes the biggest losses to the farmers due to high mortality rates, with the mortality rates going up to about 100% on a farm.
Pig farmers at the expo were also educated on modern production methods like artificial insemination and how to produce value-added pork products. Africa's pork consumption has steadily increased over the years. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, says pork accounted for only 2% of consumption in 1960, but today makes up a third of all the meat consumed. Worldwide, pork at 40% is the most widely eaten meat, followed by poultry at 34%. A little more than half of all pork is produced in Asia, while Europe and North America produce most of the rest. Africa comes in last with only 1% of global production. However, pork is becoming more popular on the continent. According to TradeProbe, a quarterly report produced by the South African National Agriculture Marketing Council, South Africans consume more of the meat than the country produces. So, there is a market for both domestic producers and for pig farmers living outside the country. The FAO says in developing countries, small-scale and subsistence farmers produce half of all pork on the market. But in Uganda, a widening middle class has money to spend on pork and other non-traditional foods. And that's good news for the country's pig farmers. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
Officials today said suspected Islamists beheaded at least 10 people in northern Mozambique near one of the world's largest untapped offshore natural gas fields. There were unconfirmed reports that two victims were children. The attack before dawn Sunday occurred in the village of Manjane near the town of Palma in Cabo Delgado province. That is near the location of the country's first attack attributed to the Islamic group Al-Shabaab. An assault on a police station and military post last October left two police officers and 14 attackers dead. The group has not been linked to the Somali extremist group of the same name. Muslims make up 18% of Mozambique's population, but they are the predominant religion in the north. That region has missed out on most of the country's economic growth over the past 20 years, providing recruitment grounds for Al-Shabaab. Security teams have been shifted to the region because of concerns about more attacks.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhibi in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Linus Rimkus, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, is it the dawn of a new era in Ethiopian politics? Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed is promising to strengthen democratic reforms and promote unity in the East African nation. Moving forward in Ethiopia on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.